Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Computer Weekly Downtime Upload Podcast. I'm Cliff Saron and my guest today is Connor Reardon. Is that about right?
That's correct.
Sorry, Connor, I just wanted to get your name right. Who's the... You've recently taken over as chair of the user group.
Correct, right? Yes. So I took over from Paul Cooper back in April. I've been on the board for the last 5 years. I was vice chair for the previous 2 years. So yeah, so in April, Paul stood down after, I think, 7 years in the role. And yeah, I'm kind of really excited to take on the role. You know, I think there's... It's a really interesting time in the SAP world. A lot of change going on, a lot of innovation coming out, and a lot of upgrades still to happen.
Yes, yes. And we're here today, this is being recorded at the user group, so the Connect 2024 user group. And I remember speaking to you last year. So what has changed a year on? Obviously, you're the new chair, so this is that's a big thing. And what else has happened?
Yeah, I think last year there was very much, both in our meeting and probably the German user group in September, there was very much probably a call out to SAP in terms of help. You know, we all want to do this. We all want to get to the endpoint. We just can't do it as fast as you want us to do it. And we're going to need some financial support to get there too, because this transition from ECC to S4 is not going to be easy. And I think, you know, SAP responded to that. And I think they came out with the modernization program in January, which I think was well received by our customers and our members. And I think as well, you could even hear probably in Leila's today, you know, I think SAP kind of understand that this probably will take a little bit longer.
So Leila's the new managing director.
Is new managing director for the UK Ireland. You know, this will take probably a little bit longer, not because members aren't convinced about SAP strategy, but we need to manage risk.
Yes.
You know, we probably need to do this in multiple steps rather than one big step.
It did seem from the keynote that Leila was talking more about, did they over push it a little bit? Were they a bit too enthusiastic last year?
We're talking about
the move to RISE.
Yeah, I think, you know, if it's interesting, like, you know, I've been doing SAP for many years and sometimes when I was doing deployments, you only see stuff in two steps. You go in, you do the deployment, you finish. And when you talk to the business, they go, but it's not that easy. Like, it's multiple steps. So I think, I would say in all fairness, like, to them, it was quite logical, you know, to do it in one step for most organizations. And why wouldn't you do it? And I think as business users and as and members, it's like, yeah, it's just not that easy. You know, you got to think of all the organization change management, all the retraining, all the disruption, and like, how do you manage that? And, you know, a business can easily get overwhelmed with that volume of change. And therefore, you break it down into chunks. And I think that's the way the industry has reacted. I think SAP has listened. They've seen it. And, yeah, I think it was refreshing today that RISE wasn't mentioned. But
it was mentioned once.
Yeah, but I think, look, it's like all these things. I think, you know, members understand SAP strategy.
Yeah,
you know, and I said today, it's not a question of if customers go to RISE. The majority of customers will go to RISE at some stage, whenever it's right for them. That might be next year. That could be 2030. Who knows? And I suppose it's that process of doing it when it's right for the customers, rather than doing it when it's right for SAP. And I think that's the transition that has kind of happened.
I think from the people I've spoken to on the customer side, that's been the... that they've always felt that they're beholden to SAP. They have to... It's a bit like the Windows... I mean, this is a minor thing, but Windows 10 to Windows 11, you know, it's going to happen. And you've got 1 year from now to get it done, but you don't really want to do it. And I think, although it's a much more complicated project, it's that sort of thing. We don't really want to do it today because there are so many other priorities in the business.
Yeah. I mean, look, you can see it from both sides. I think if you look at S4 has been on the market 8 years. It's not a new product, like, you know. Obviously, there's been different releases of it, but it's been on the market for 8 years. So When we were out at Sugen meeting in April, which is the Super User Executive Network, and we met with Christian Klein and we met with some of the ELT, you know, they kind of explained to us from their perspective, which was good insight in terms of they spend billions of dollars supporting the ECC landscape. And, you know, when you're looking forward and you're building for the future and you're looking at where you spend your money, you know, how do you apply the capital? You're spending it on a product that you're trying to retire.
Yes.
You know, that becomes a difficult conversation in terms of, you know, why do we keep spending money on a product we're going to retire? But at the same time, a huge amount of your customer base are still on that product.
Mm.
So you can see from an SAP perspective why they want customers to move, you know. And I think for us as a customer base, it's the inevitable. We have to move at some stage.
Yes.
And maybe there's a bit of change resistance there too sometimes. Like, people don't like being told what to do.
Mm. But in your daytime job, your full-time job, along with the user group, you have gone through this process.
Yeah, we went through this over the last year and a half. So it was a 20-month program.
Mm.
We started in January 23. We went live in August 24. It was a significant undertaking by the IT department.
Mm.
I got engaged in it probably the last 6 months because I was the business cutover lead for global supply chain. But the key focus was around risk. It was like, we're doing this major upgrade, and it's how do we make sure that from a business disruption perspective, we get it in, get it upgraded, go live with no business impact. So that was success for us.
Yes.
And I think for a lot of companies, that is also a success. It's not, did you deliver Fiori apps? Did you deliver innovation? Did you deliver? That's not success. Success is you can still run your business the day after you switch over.
Do you think business decision makers understand that, you know, this thing, ECC, is going to be out of support at some point? And what you end up with will take time before it's actually a better... Starts delivering better, you know, better value to the business.
Yeah, I mean, my experience is no, they don't.
Mm.
And I suppose it's interesting when you come from IT and you move back into the business, it's, you know, that's not their skill set, and it shouldn't be, and they shouldn't be required to know as well, you know. And it's finding that balance between the IT organizations educating the business on the art of the possible. But ultimately, the business are totally dependent on IT to guide them on these systems. I mean, like, the landscape has got so complex these days. You know, it used to be you had your ECC on-prem, that was it.
Yes.
And now you have, like, so many systems, and it's so complex that at a business user level, there's no way they can get their head around it. So it is really dependent on IT to actually drive the technical strategy around us and educate the business on the art of the possible.
I mean, I would say, I'm looking at you here,
yeah.
Like, you were probably around in Y2K.
I was, yeah.
So I
did a Y2K SAP project, yes. Yeah.
And I think that's where all of this sort of stems from. It's the, you know, the big migration of R2 and the mainframe type systems to something that's client server, something that's at the time was seen as modern. And I wonder whether, you know, people feel, businesses, that, you know, why is it every, you know, so many years we have this major thing that we have to do? I mean, what other aspect of business requires hundreds of millions in some cases to be thrown into something, then, you know, 10 years later, and again, it has to be done?
Yeah, see, I suppose it's all innovation and progress. You know, it's like... you know, when you think about, like, you know, what most companies are doing on ECC today, it's you're running your manufacturing, you're running your procurement, you know, you're running your sales, you're running your finance, and you're doing it in a way that you'd have done it over the last 20 years.
Mm.
And now, in this new digital world, you've got access to infinite amount of more data that can help drive better decision making. And so if you want to innovate and have smarter ways of running your business, you need to be on a better platform to do that.
Mm.
So, you know, I see a lot, like, for example, in, you know, AI forecasting. So in the past, you'd have planners that would try and figure out, okay, what's my forecast, and put the forecast into SAP, and then you'd go off and make whatever you're doing. Like, whereas now you can get AI to do that and figure out what your demand plans are, and probably do it better than the planners can do, because they can bring in so many different sources of information. Maybe for me, I think something like that, the constant need to be more efficient,
yes,
to drive better earnings per share, to get better margins, to be growth companies by the street, it drives a lot of this in terms of people are under more pressure to drive more innovation. And in order to deliver more innovation, you need more modern platforms.
Mm. Sorry, I was going to interrupt you then, because although I'm not sort of familiar with how the SAP AI works, and I know that in the conversation, in the keynote, there was a talk of the 130 plus, you know, AI solutions that are now in, you know, out there. What I think would concern the listeners of this podcast and Computer Weekly readers is, where is that data coming from? How is the AI learning? Because if it's learning from internal stuff, internal business processes, in theory, it's taking what's unique in your business and making it available and to everyone. And I'm not sure if you're aware of how the AI is, what it's doing, where it's getting its data from.
I think, you know, two things. First of all, I mean, a lot of the S4 Joule solutions are only available to cloud customers, RISE cloud customers. So from our user base at the moment, most of our customers aren't there. So most of our customers won't be using Joule at this point in time. I think with the use cases that are coming out, a lot of it is based around anonymizing the data.
Mm.
I think there's still a lot of work needs to go into figuring out how that's going to work. But yeah, it's about having anonymized data so that, you know, the tool is learning from other people's data, but it's not necessarily, you know, you're not necessarily giving it intellectual property.
Mm.
But I don't think there's enough use cases out there yet to challenge that. I think where, to me, the business opportunities probably in the shorter term are it's more internal within an organization. You know, you can still use AI within your organization to learn from the way you run your processes without having to bring in your competitors' data as well.
Mm.
So, you know, again, I think some of the use cases that'll be developed would be kind of in-state, 10 years' time kind of use cases that, you know, just Gartner hype cycles. Mm. They're up at the top of the hype cycle, you know, probably 1 in 10 will make it, and then you'll kind of, that will kind of, you know, get through the trough of disillusionment and out the back door. So I think there'll be definitely some good solid use cases coming out of this, but how we deploy it is still so new.
Mm.
You know, I was talking to Alex earlier, I remember a couple of years ago being on a blockchain project, and we spent a lot of money on the blockchain program. And at the very end, we came out with zero use cases.
And all the
examples were very valid.
Mm.
But when you try and take those real use cases and put them into practical operation, it's like they didn't make sense. So I think this one won't be like blockchain, but I think there's still a lot of work is going to have to go into.
I mean, it is at the top of the Gartner hype cycle.
Yeah, absolutely.
People are exactly in that situation where projects are kind of like failing because they're not valuable enough.
Or even the cost of, because the biggest challenge with, I think I said earlier, like, you know, the biggest challenge with this program is not going to be the technology, it's going to be the data.
Mm.
So if you've got poor data, you're going to get poor outcomes.
Yes.
And therefore, even though you may have a technically solid, good solution that can deliver value, the cost of remediating your data might be even more expensive than the use case itself. Mm. And so you look at it and say, oh my God, we're going to have to fix all this data and it's going to cost so much money and the ROI mightn't be there. So I think data is what's going to kill this, maybe, than the technology itself.
And it's not just AI. I mean, obviously AstraZeneca was speaking at the keynote earlier today and that was one of the things that came out. You know, the data is the thing that you have to get right. You know, if you're trying to have a single instance of SAP across a global organization, it's, and you know, that hasn't been running a single instance, it's not going to happen straight overnight.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, and you see some companies are really good at it. They've got really strong data governance models, and they've got a lot of rules around where data should be stored and how you replicate it out to other systems. And other companies don't. And I think it's if you don't have those strong governance processes in place, you're really going to struggle with AI, because it's going to be rubbish in, rubbish out, you know. That's going to be a big challenge.
Is that also the case for moving from ECC to S4, even on-prem?
Not really. I think, you know, I mean, if you think about it today, if you're on ECC on-prem and your processes are working on your existing data set, they're going to work on your S4, you know, processes as well. So, you know, it's, you know, what you'll find in a lot of companies is that, like, they'll have their data in SAP, they're dumping their data out into a data warehouse, they're enriching their data, and they're doing reports off the back of it. But your AI will go on the S4 data, not the data in your data warehouse. So it's figuring out, you know, how do you clean up your S4 data set? How do you get good governance? How do you come up with data residency rules? Where should the master data sit? If you're feeding your customer master into 20 different systems, does each system, is that all the master, or is the master in SAP? And how do you manage that? Because that's where all that change needs to happen, like that. And that's not easy, because sometimes you might, like within an organization, you might own some of those other systems. So now you got to negotiate and say, hey, you know, we don't want you to maintain data anymore in your system. We're going to send you data from our system. And that takes months of negotiation. Well, why are you in charge and we're not in charge? And so you've all this organizational stuff, and it can get really messy. And that's where you need really strong leadership on the governance level, which is what really impressive with AstraZeneca. It's painful stuff, but it's going to pay dividends in the long term for them.
I think one takeaway that I took from that AstraZeneca presentation is that even when you buy something on day one, and it's probably the right thing to do on day one, a year into the project, it may not be the right thing, because there's so many unknowns as you develop what you want, your understanding of the problem that you're trying to solve.
Yeah, no, absolutely, because, you know, all businesses are different, and people's business processes are different, and often, I think, you know, Russ said it, like, you know, the culture of someone like AstraZeneca is very collaborative. It'd be kind of quite similar in Pfizer, it's very collaborative, and so sometimes decisions take a long time because you're keeping everybody happy, and when you're trying to drive standardization, you know, it's kind of the opposite. It's like, okay, we're going to agree a standard way of doing it, and it's not a democracy, you don't get a vote, and that's a totally different culture, and so that's where it can get tricky when you're trying to drive these projects, because it's you want the process to be stronger than the individuals.
Yes.
And if you're in an organization where individuals are quite strong, then it can be a challenge.
And finally, I mean, what would be the one takeaway? This is the first day of the event, but what would be your final? What's your final message to the delegates today, to the listeners of the podcast, Computer Weekly readers, regarding SAP, SAP strategy, ECC, RISE, S/4HANA?
Yeah, I think the key thing is when you see the data today, we're still at like 33 or 4% of our members have made the move to S4. And I think we need that we need that number to move and move quicker. I think last year it was 29, so we've only gone up like 5% in a year. Like, I mean, it's not great. And when you talk to the members, there's a bit of like, you know, yeah, we're still trying to figure out our strategy. We're trying to figure out when we'll do it, why we'll do it. And for me, if you're staying with SAP, it's not if you're going to do this, it's when. Like, so, you know, I'd like to be back here next year and that number be over 50% maybe, with another cohort in progress. And so trying to get our members to maybe move a bit, I won't say faster, but maybe more urgency. Get more urgency to the process, because once you've done it, it's it's a huge weight off the shoulders of IT that allows them then to go back to the business and start the innovation program.
And I guess it's a bit like Y2K, because if you leave it too late, there'll be a demand for skills, a run on skills, which will drive up consultancy costs.
There will definitely be a run on skills. I mean, I remember paying people in 1999 higher rates than I would pay them today. And that was purely based on skills availability, and we're paying people 30, 40% retention bonuses on the total value of contracts. It was just, it was a crazy time. Now, I don't think it's going to be that bad, but I do think there's going to be a spike in demand for skilled resources, and they just won't be there. Like, and you don't want to get caught leaving this too late. Because ultimately, it's like I said to you earlier, it's like when you're buying a new car, you know. You have your old car, it's working well. Yeah, it might be costing a bit more in maintenance. And then you buy the new car. When you buy the new car, you say, why did I wait so long to fucking change it? Like, you know, it was like, you know, this, you know. And so I won't say this is like buying a new car, but it's something similar. It's like, why, what's the value in waiting? You know? So unless there's a real business imperative to wait, like, you just get, pull off the plaster. Just do it. Get it over the line. Reposition for innovation and move on, like, you know. So that'd be hopefully my message to members.
Excellent. Well, Conor, thank you ever so much for taking part in today's podcast. And thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.